You're listening to a recorded talk from Greenbelt Festival.
Now, has anybody done a park run before? Oh, that's so many. Okay, 3, 2, 1, shout out your local park run, go! Excellent. I got all of those. Has anybody done the Greenbelt run before? Yeah, nice. Is anybody doing it tomorrow? Yeah, nice. So if you haven't done the Greenbelt run before, it's very much inspired by Parkrun. And it starts over there next to the hothouse this year. And we will all gather and we'll all have a moment together, and people who need to limber up will limber up. And then we're going to do a gorgeous run around the site. It's the most... It's satisfying run I think I've ever done. It's so much fun. People last year were out like in the campsite banging their pots as I ran past. I felt fantastic. So I would really urge you that if you're not a confident runner, to give this one a go, because my gosh, the atmosphere is fantastic. Greenbelt Run was obviously inspired by Parkrun, and the founder of Parkrun is here behind the curtain ready to talk to you about that movement. Parkrun, if you don't know, is a free timed run, a 5k run every Saturday morning at 9 a.m, although ours is at 8:30. Don't be fooled, be there at 8:30. And so Paul Sinton Hewitt, who is the founder of Parkrun, is here with long-term Greenbelter and author Jenny Baker to talk to you today about that movement. So I'd like to start the applause from here, please. So I'm going to call this section one. I'm going to call this section two, the benches and forwards. Here, section three. And so we'll begin with a gentle applause, move it up to a rapturous and then deafening, and then they will come onto the stage if that works for you. So please, section one, begin with a gentle applause. Oh, it's lovely. And then section two, if you could. And then section three, Paul Sinton Hewitt, Jenny Baker.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here. I didn't actually see how many park runners because I was behind. So could we have another little show of hands? Who does park run? Amazing. So we're among friends. And who has done parkrun for the first time since the last Greenbelt? Any new parkrunners? Well done. Let's give these people a round of applause. So it's fantastic to have Paul here. I think we've invited you lots of times and you finally said yes. So we're delighted that you're here. But could you tell us a bit about how you got into running and what you get out of running?
Firstly, let me just say how wonderful it is to be here. Thank you very much for having me. I'm absolutely delighted. So my running story really started at school. It's a long story, but I'm going to try and just condense it. So I think I found that the action of being out running was quite emboldening. It gave me that sense of freedom, that sense of power, that sense of I could be on my own and not be with everybody else. It started very modestly. I think it started on the track at about 800 meters and then 3,000 meters, but very quickly became cross-country. And I grew up in South Africa, and I was in a boarding school in the middle of nowhere in South Africa. And all sorts of rules and regimented behaviors that completely institutionalized. But the one thing I was allowed to do was to get up early in the morning before everybody else and head out in my running kit into the streets of Potchefstroom, and completely unmanaged. So that was, I suppose, a sense of getting away from everybody and just having a little bit of time on my own. That's where it started.
Yeah. And what has running meant to you, you know, through your life? I think we all have different stages as runners, don't we? Like we're beginners when perhaps we're quite tentative about calling ourselves a runner, and then, yeah, you know, you do events. And but what does running give you?
Well, I think the first recollection I had that running was something that I needed was probably as a young adult, 20, 22. I got married at 21. I was working at 21. And I had all those pressures that came with trying to make a relationship work and also at the same time getting my job done. And of course, I think I didn't know it then, but I did suffer from mental health, depression, all those sorts of things. And all I can remember is that going for a run helped everything. It brought me out of those low pits. It sort of stopped me reaching too many highs. It sort of evened the curve out. So that was in my 20s. And I didn't join a running club until I think I was 24. And when I was 24, I found very quickly that I was competitive. I started out just going to run with my mates and so on, but before long I was beating them and I was trying to beat them and I was looking for improving the whole time. So 24, joined a running club, started doing road running mostly, ran my first marathon at I think the age of 24. I ran that in 3 hours and 15. My second one I ran in 2 hours and 45. And I think my third one was 2 hours and 36. So I sort of grew to know that I was a decent runner fairly quickly.
Excellent. And then, you know, obviously we age, don't we? I'm on that journey of aging as a runner, which can be hard, can't it, to kind of leave behind the PBs. But has running changed for you as you've got older?
Well, where I am right now, I'm right back at the beginning. So I'm now a volunteer, not so much a runner anymore. I have arthritis in my left knee, and I have to be very careful how much running I do. So pretty much, it's still a very important part of me, and the fact that I can't do it is slightly negative, but I compensate with that by going for walks and getting on my bicycle. But I don't think I'll ever be able to get away from the fact that I am a runner and running is part of who I am and what I do, and the natural goodness that comes from being a runner. That will be with me forever.
Yeah, excellent. So parkrun began nearly 20 years ago in Bushy Park in October 2004. It's now a global phenomenon, as I'm sure you're aware. So last weekend, there's somebody who does stats for parkrun every week on his blog. So I looked it up for last weekend. There were just over 2,000 parkruns taking place in 21 countries with 335,000 parkrunners and over 42,000 volunteers. And then junior parkrun is 2K on a Sunday. That was 460 locations with 25,000 juniors running, not to mention their parents probably who were running with them. So it's quite an incredible thing. But how did it begin? I'm sure you've been asked this lots of times. How did it start? And did you know what you were starting?
Well, clearly I didn't know what I was starting. I was 42 when I rediscovered running. I joined a running club. It was a drinking club with a running problem. And I joined them because I wanted to be with people that I could identify with. But again, this competitive streak came back, and it came back pretty quickly. And I set myself a target of running my fastest ever marathon. So I wanted to break the 3.5 hour time, which I figured I could do because I was now 42. I had some more intelligence, more experience. I think I knew how to write a program for the first time in my life. And I set about to do that. And on the way to doing that, I ran a 2:42 marathon. And my goal was then London the following year. And in order to get to London, I had all these milestones that I was going to meet, including running a 72-minute half and a 32-minute 10, which I achieved. But I got injured along the way. So London came and went without me. I never, ever ran the 2:30 that I wanted to run. But it's that injury that really put me on the bench. And it said, you're never going to run again, never going to run properly again. And certainly you won't even be able to run for fun for the next 2 years. So I thought, actually, the people I was running with, they were my congregation. And they were the people I liked the most, to be with the most. And the way I used to do that was go to the club on a Thursday night, and we would go for a run, and then we would sit in the clubhouse and drink a beer or two. And now, when I went to the clubhouse, they'd all go running, and I was left on my own, and I'd wait and wait, and then they'd eventually come back, and they were filled with the joys of life, and I didn't have any of that. So all I had was this cold beer getting warm. And so I decided I didn't really want that. I had to do something else. Took into account the fact that I'd been a beneficiary of volunteering for the last 40 years. People had been doing these races, standing on the corners, helping me, and I'd never, ever done that. So all of that came into the melting pot, and I realized that what I wanted to do was to put on an event in my local park every single week with no help, where I would do everything that was required, and people could just come. They didn't have to come every week. It was entirely up to them what they would do. The course would always be the same. There would be no marshals. There'd be no directions. It'd be very, very minimal. And so I started that in October the 2nd, 2004. 13 people came up, joined me, 14 the next week, and then the following week there were 12. I was never really worried about the numbers. It didn't occur to me that that was important, and it still isn't an important thing as far as I'm concerned. What happened was that these people who, you know, they weren't the same people. They kept changing. A whole bunch of them were brand new to running. They were wives rather than the husbands. They were children. And they kept saying to me, this is absolutely wonderful, such a magnificent thing. We insisted on going for coffee afterwards. That coffee became my church, my place, my happy place, where I would do a little bit of the event management and so on, but we would just sit and talk. And eventually, we would be in the coffee shop until after 2 o'clock in an afternoon. So my Saturday became park run. Obviously, it took a long time for us to get to our second event. I think it was just over 2.5 years. But by the time I got to the second event, Bushy Park was now a 250-strong event with maybe, I don't know, 3,000 or 4,000 people registered. So it was having a life of its own, and it was a really, really important part of my weekly social gathering. It's really important.
Yeah. And in that park run, that journey of growth of park run, there must have been several moments when you thought, wow, you know, this is big, this is growing. I mean, what were those moments when you realized?
Not at that time. So in those first 2 years, a very close friend of mine kept saying to me, this is wonderful and you need to do more. And I kept saying, no, it's fine. I'm happy with it the way it is. I'll keep my church to myself. And eventually one day he came to meet me and he put Wimbledon Common Time Trial, as it was called. He put the course in front of me and he said, there you are, go and do it. And I, tired of saying no, it's a bit like Greenbelt. So I accepted the challenge, but it was a very sad moment because it meant that I had to leave Bushy Park. I had to physically hand over the reins of something that I'd been there every single Saturday. I'd done pretty much everything. I'd built the software and so on. So I had to rebuild some of the software so that we could have two events where it doesn't matter where you registered. Right. You could register once, you can participate anywhere. And that was a concept that was immediately something that I wanted to do right there. And also the concept of never having to tell us when you're coming. Mm. It's entirely up to you. So giving you the autonomy, it's your decisions as to when you come and how you come and that sort of thing. First weekend of January 2007, we started Wimbledon Common. And in that moment, I knew that if I could do two, then I can do three. And if I can do three, then I can do 10. And so in 2007, my motto changed. People asked me, what is it that you want for Park Run? And it wasn't called Park Run then, still. But I used to say, you could have a park run in any town or village that you want one. It's like a playground. We create the playground for you, and then we invite you to come and play. And it's up to you whether you want to come and play or not. We build the rules around how you can play, and then it's entirely up to you whether you do that. So even in those years, I mean, I knew that it would grow, but it wasn't a passion to grow it. I would let it grow organically. So I never once did any marketing around Parkrun. I never built flyers and I didn't create marketing letters or anything. I just put the stuff on the website. People told people. And the word of mouth is what really helped Parkrun to grow in those first years. I remember when the 10,000 person signed up, and I remember thinking, oh my word, this is big. Some years later, the millionth person signed up, and then I stopped counting.
Yeah, fantastic. I think probably lots of us have had that experience of that word of mouth thing of, oh, come along and try it and do it. I'm not going to ask you what your favourite parkrun is, because that's like asking a parent what their favourite child is. But have you got a story you could tell us about a parkrun that you particularly enjoyed or that stood out for you, or, you know, that kind of demonstrates what parkrun is?
So parkrun is the same pretty much wherever you go in the world, except they're all different. Every single one has its own personality. And that's kind of what I like about parkrun. I once visited South Africa, it was 2015. I took a bunch of our country managers from Denmark, from Australia, from France, etc. And we took them all across to South Africa to do a bit of a team building exercise. And I ended up at this tiny little parkrun in the middle of nowhere. We traveled by bus, like a Hiace or something, just a small minibus, on these dirt roads, red dirt just billowing from the tires, and we stopped in the middle of a maize field. And the maize was 10 feet high, literally above my heads. And there were about 20 or 30 locals stood there, no flags, no start, no cafe, no toilets. They were just stood there. And we all decamped, said hello to them. There were a bunch of young teenagers, and they all had flip-flops on. And I wondered to myself, how's this going to work and where does it go and so on. Anyway, we lined up at the start and one of the athletes picked up a cone, put it under his arm, and I still didn't know what was going on. Anyway, they let us off and the boys took their flip-flops off, stuck it under their arms and they're running barefoot down. And this guy with the cone, he was the fastest. He ran 2.5 kilometers out, stuck the cone down, turned around and ran back. And of course, I couldn't see where I was going because the maize fields were literally above my head. All I had was this dirt track in front of me. And it turned out to be one of the most wonderful experiences. And there have been so many like that. No matter where you go in the world, you will find your home with parkruns. We have that thing in common. We all know what parkrun is. We all know that experience. We care about each other. We're there for the community. But then at some point, there will be this run that you have to do. You can either walk or jog, and it's a bit of fun.
Yeah, excellent. One of the things that stands out for me about parkrun is how inclusive it is. And so, obviously, we've had the Olympics recently, and there were at least two Olympians, Georgia Bell and Josh Kerr, saying how parkrun had been really important for them in their running journey. So those are kind of the elite athletes. And then, you know, my friend Linda has just started doing parkrun and she walks it with her dog, and that's been really significant. And there's space for, you know, all those people. Has that been, you've talked a bit about some of the values, I suppose, as you've developed parkrun, as it's grown, what you've wanted to kind of keep. Has inclusion been a really important thing? Have you been intentional about that?
So I think that inclusion rates right at the top of our list of things that we need to protect and hold dear. That very, very first parkrun in Bushy Park, I went down to the local sweatshop running store and I asked them to give me some prizes. And they gave me a book of vouchers, which I could then use in any way that I wanted. And on that day, two people crossed the line together at the first. And then the last person was a lady who finished. She wasn't a runner. It was her first time ever. And she finished last. And they both, I gave them all a voucher each, exactly the same prize. And in that moment, I think the principle that everybody is equal and everybody is welcome. And I remember in those first few years being approached by lots of people who never ever saw themselves as runners, often overweight, often probably on the margins, who said, you know, I watched London Marathon and there's no way I could ever do that. But they were participating. And one of the behaviors that I noticed very, very early on, the people who I had known to be athletes in running clubs were coming down with their families, and they were on the sidelines while their families were participating for the first time. So there were lots of strong messages. I don't want to say that I created every single principle that Parkrun has. These things have been grown over time through the experiences that you've had, that you've shared with us. But one of the things that I think I stand really, really firm on is that everybody is welcome at Parkrun. And that makes for a difficult conversation sometimes, because it's a principle that can make other principles more complex, more difficult to deal with. So it's complex. But yes, I want as many people as possible to experience Parkrun, because the experience of being outdoors in the open and doing some form of exercise is what leads us to what we stand for, which is health and well-being.
Yes. And on that health and well-being, I mean, Parkrun is now something that doctors prescribe, isn't it, to people, you know, that sort of social prescribing. I think both for the health benefits, but also for community, and it helps to combat loneliness. And yeah, what do you think about Parkrun makes it more that it's more than just a run, isn't it, in terms of what it gives to people?
I think it's very difficult to put that in a nutshell, but absolutely it starts with the fact that it's free, and that we then invite everybody in. It doesn't matter who you are, you can wear anything you want to wear. You don't put a number on. You don't have to look like an athlete. I remember an 80-year-old gentleman at Brockwell Park doing his first park run in a full suit. And for the next year or so, he came down in his suit every single week. And never once did anybody say to him, why don't you wear shorts and a tracksuit or something? So I remember a story once where we invited a group to come and talk to us. And they were a bunch of black women based in London, and they call themselves Black Women Can Run. And the title kind of suggests where we're going with this. But when they were talking to us, they were up on stage, and they were suggesting that if you can't see yourself in the thing that you're looking at, there's probably no chance that you're going to become that. There's no chance that you can get there. And it was a real eye-opener. And I think that what Parkrun allows us to do is to see all types of people. That's the inclusivity. And it does come from, it starts with being free. It's then how we treat people, the fact that we're volunteer-led, that we're a charity, since about 2017, we're a charity. And what that means is, it's a significant difference to what we were before. So I think all these things are leading towards making sure that everybody can and should be participating in Parkrun.
Yeah. And with junior Parkrun, obviously children can take part as well. I mean, children can join in, can't they, with the 5K Parkrun as well if they want to. But, you know, junior Parkrun is deliberately on a different day. It's a shorter distance. And I've got three granddaughters, and my oldest granddaughter, for her fourth birthday, I bought her trainers, and we took her to Parkrun, junior Parkrun, and she hadn't done much running before. And I realized actually 2K is a really long distance for a four-year-old, and there was a lot of cajoling that was going on in that first one. But she now loves it, and her sister, and there's a three-year-old. I'm hoping she's going to get trainers for her fourth birthday as well. I'm hoping she'll get into it too. But do you want to talk a bit about junior Parkrun, and, you know, sort of what the intentions have been around that?
So as you understand, the general Parkrun series, it's entirely up to you whether you come down and join and so on. It sort of fuels itself, because you tell people, etc. Junior Parkrun is a completely different product. It's much more complex for us to deliver. We've got to have so much more respect for safeguarding and the care of others. But what we're trying to do there is to give children the right to run completely on their own for a distance that is quite manageable. And it doesn't have to be a run. They can walk. And they really, we want the joy of participating in some way over that distance. And we don't care whether they do the full distance or not. Most of our junior courses are lapped, so they can do one and then they can stop. The key here is that you're offering an intervention at a very early age in somebody's life to teach them a life skill that many of us older folk might have completely missed. Your parents didn't show you that running could be something that you could do, and as a result, it's a real big challenge to find a way to actually enjoy running. Running is hard. These little kids are finding that it's like riding a bike. Once you can do it, you can do it. And you teach that skill very, very early on. It's something, I mean, I've seen these kids on their first day. They're all gangly. The arms are everywhere. And then on their sixth or seventh week, they're athletes. They've learned this thing. And if they go away from the sport of running, that's absolutely fine. They'll find themselves doing things like swimming or hockey or whatever it might be. But that point when they want to come back to it, it'll be like getting back on the bike. They'll struggle on the first one. The second one will be a bit easier. And before you know it, they're back running again. So it is a life skill like swimming, something that I think everybody should be encouraged to discover what they're capable of at some point in their life.
Mm. Thank you, yeah. And another development of Parkrun is that it now takes place in, I think, 28 different prisons in UK, Ireland and Australia. Could you tell us a bit about how that came about? Was that your idea?
No, definitely not. like so many good things that happened at Parkrun, they came from people like yourselves. Shane Spencer is a prison guard at Blackcomb, up in the north, and he's also a park runner. And he thought, what if I were to bring the park run format into the prison? And so he approached us, and of course, under our health and well-being banner, we took that on as an initiative, an intervention. And I mean, we got it wrong quite badly in the beginning. You know, some of our first attempts at getting prisons doing parkrun, the prisoners were doing drugs, selling to each other along the way. So we had to adapt. We had to learn what was the right thing to do. And now parkrun is a privilege in these prisons. And people have to earn the right to do that parkrun. And when they've earned the right, they start to volunteer and they run. And they then identify with their family who are doing parkruns outside of prison, and they start to compare notes. Oh, I did it in 25 minutes and you did it in 30, and this bond is created. And there are actually quite a few stories now of people who've been released from prison and who are part of the parkrun community and living really, really good lives. Some really excellent runners as well. So it's amazing what you can do with just a little bit of something, a good habit rather than a bad habit.
And yeah, well done, thank you. But also, I think that again shows how, if you do parkrun, you join a community, don't you? And, being able to turn up somewhere and people know you and, you can contribute to something that, and I think that's one of the challenges, isn't it, for people coming out of prison is often, can perhaps feel a bit lost or don't want to go back perhaps to the community that they came from, but maybe something like parkrun gives them another place to belong.
I think community is probably the most important part of what parkrun's all about. We're here at a Christian festival, and I know church is a community, and it's a really, really important thing. And parkrun fits that bill pretty well because it allows people to come together in the way they want to, and to do the thing that really appeals to them, whether that's volunteering, walking, jogging, or running. I think that if the community is not there for the person who's been ostracized, they will remain ostracized, and they've got no chance of getting back to some normal sense of life. I mean, you don't even have to be ostracized. You just, the people who are lonely, the people who are stuck at home and on their own on Christmas Day, offering them something where they don't feel they are being taken out of normal context. They're part of this general thing. They can hide away if they want. They can be a volunteer if they want. I think it's a vital part of helping people be normal. So, yeah.
Yeah. And you, I think you prefer to Parkrun as your church or your congregation. And those of us that have ever been regular churchgoers, I think, find a lot of resonance with elements of Parkrun, you know, that it's the same time and place every week, that it gathers people in. You know, if you go to a new Parkrun, you can kind of, you know, end up somewhere near where it's going to begin, and then you just follow the people. Perhaps that's not the same as church, but you follow the people going to Parkrun. But then, you know, there's a liturgy of thanking the volunteers and marking the milestones and welcoming the tourists. And then it is volunteer-led. It wouldn't happen without volunteers, which I think, you know, a lot of churches are like that. There's always the notices, don't take the tokens home. There's coffee afterwards. I don't know. What can a question for us to think about is, what can church learn from Parkrun, and maybe what can Parkrun learn from church?
I'm sure I can't be the one to tell you what you can learn. The one thing we don't have is a pulpit. But
yeah, a little cheer for that one.
I think the volunteering side of Parkrun emulates what goes on in church quite well. And more often than not, we have to remind people to be thankful for the volunteers, because it's you see the same people every single week doing these jobs, and you realize, well, often you think they're doing it and they're doing a really, really excellent job, so I don't need to go and help. They don't really need me. And often when park run teams say to me, we're struggling for volunteers and what can we do about it, I always say, go and tap someone on the shoulder and say, would you like to come and help? And it doesn't matter what it is you ask them to do, but by just doing that, they realize, oh, you do mean me, don't you? It's not just a general call out for come and help us. Because these, like church, park run is run in a pretty efficient way. And when they do the call out and say, please, can you help us? We always need volunteers. You think it's not really necessary because everything's just working so damn well. Yeah. So no, I don't think I could teach you anything about church. I think love your neighbor, which yeah, you already do.
We're trying. Trying our best. I mean, I think I was thinking about it. I think one of the things about Parkrun is that obviously it's a running event, but it's not just for runners. No. You know, anybody can turn up. And I think church at its best is obviously about faith and being people of faith, but it shouldn't just be for people of faith. You know, it should be for anybody. And I think we have a lot to learn about inclusion, you know, from Parkrun, making space for everybody. We're often not very good at that in the church. You know, we kind of set the bar for you can belong if X, Y, and Z. So I think, yeah, there's a lot we can learn.
Well, one of the things about that seems obvious is that you have all these different kinds of churches. You have the Anglican Church, you have the Brothers, you have all, and that sets out their stall differently from each other. So I think what we have at Greenbelt sort of emulates what I would like to think about church, where there are many denominations. Nobody's talking about their particular denomination. You're all talking about this faith that you have. I don't know if it's one God or more gods, but it's a God that you care about. And how you relate to each other is in fairness, in truth, in compassion, and all those things. And that's what's important, really. And if we're going to live well, we have to live in a society where we can do those things.
Yeah. All of us that do Parkrun are really invested in it, and we think of it as it's ours, you know, it's our Parkrun, and we're very invested in what it does. And I think it's inevitable with something as successful as it is, as popular as it is, that you face criticism or, you know, people grumbling. You know, you have to make decisions about how it's going to run and how you're going to protect the kind of core of what it is. How do you cope with that criticism and, you know, people having a go if they don't quite like what you've done?
Well, to begin with, I came off social media. So I don't see a lot of the criticism. I know that I am subject to a lot of criticism, but I have other people who look at that for me. So I try not to be affected, because it would depress me. Yeah. There's no question. I think the key here is that we started out as a single event, and we had a set of rules, and as we grew and added more rules, so more events, we had to add some more rules. 5 years or so ago, we decided to become a charity, and the purpose of our charity was to make people healthier, to deal with the wellness side of things. So in setting out our stall as a charity, we made a very clear decision what we were going to be, and that meant we also know what we're not going to be. Right. So things like celebrating competition, which is a sore point for a lot of people. The fact that we decided to stop celebrating competition. If you're interested in competition, that's going to be a negative. But for us, it's about getting you out into the park, having social time with other people, doing some exercise. The fact that you want to run it as fast as you can, it's entirely up to you. We completely support you, and we give you all that information. Yeah. But we just don't celebrate it quite the way we used to, because our whole mission in life is to make the world healthier and happier through the purposes of an outdoor event.
Yeah. And you do give us age category results, don't you? Which is what I like. So I will never come first in a park run, but occasionally at a very small park run, I might come first in my age category, which gives me that little jolt of achievement. So, Paul, what's next for Parkrun? What are your hopes for the future of Parkrun?
Well, I think we're pretty well established now as a company. I would say we're just entering adulthood. 20 years old, we're a charity. We've got an excellent trustee board with all sorts of governance rules and how we get measured, how we track our progress, what things we can do and can't do. We're building our team. I think we're just about to get to that stage where the people running Parkrun will no longer be people who've grown up in the Parkrun world. They'll be professional managers with ability to run a professional company. So we're sort of at that stage where there's a bit of growth happening. Our target is to offer more and more Parkrun events throughout the world. Really focused on Europe right now. America will be next. We've got a very small team in America and a very small team in Europe. Europe is growing. America will follow. And hopefully in 5 years' time, we will be at more than 5,000 events across the world. Probably 1 million people running every single week, which will be phenomenal. And that's 1 million people all getting health and well-being every single week. So I think that's sort of the trajectory. Obviously, we have to be able to fund that. So it's all dependent on how we raise money and we keep the company going from a resource point of view.
But your commitment is that Parkrun will be free forever, isn't it?
Free forever.
That's a non-negotiable.
What you experience on a Saturday will never change. You will always be able to arrive at an event with unannounced and play the way you want to play, either by running as quickly as you can or walking as slow as you want or volunteering, whatever that is. That will always be what we do on a Saturday morning. Everything else is superfluous.
Yeah, excellent. Thank you, Paul.
Pleasure.
So we're gonna open up for Q&A, but I have a little gift for you here from Nick, who is the mastermind behind Greenbelt Run. And we've said a few times that Bushy Park Run is 20 years old next month, no, the month after. And the 20th anniversary is China. And so we have two Greenbelt mugs for you to take home. That's from Nick.
Thank you very much.
But yes, I think... I can't see. Is it Sophie with the microphone? Oh, here we are. There we go. So, yeah, any questions for Paul about Parkrun?
So,
sorry, really quick reminder, again, questions, not statements. And if you just take a second to think really hard about what you'd like to say, we will try and get to as many of you as possible. But obviously, there is a time limit. So if we don't come to you, I'm really sorry we didn't get to you this time. And just a reminder that this talk is recorded. And so if you are going to speak, your voice will be on the recording. Awesome. Thank you. I'm coming over here first and I'll head in a sort of round the back kind of loop back to the front-ish.
Thank you. So this is going to be a slight exception in that Nick, who does Greenbelt Run, did ask me to quickly tell my park run story, and then I'll follow it up with a question, but I'll keep it quick. So my park run story is that I was a very keen club runner and was lucky enough when I was doing my 100th park run that I was able to be first finisher and thought, this is amazing, I have won park run. And then a couple of years later, I got COVID, which turned into long COVID. And it was a struggle, frankly, to leave the house. But I was desperate to get back to parkrun and was eventually able to do one out of two laps, then one and a half. And when I finally did two laps and was able to finish parkrun as the last finisher, you know what? That's the week I won parkrun. That really felt like, I had come back and had wanted to come back and had really, really done something that meant a lot to me. My question would be, there's nothing like getting a disability for flushing out which organisations talk a good job about inclusion policy and which organisations actually have an inclusion culture. So my thanks to you for having a really strong inclusion culture at Parkrun. There were plenty of organisations I was unable to go back to after being disabled. Parkrun was not one of them. I felt very welcomed and came back in. So my question would be, that doesn't happen by accident. How do you manage to instill such a strong culture of inclusion in an organisation and keep that going over several years as it gets bigger and you presumably aren't making every decision for the organisation anymore?
Great question. Thank you. So I've alluded to the fact that we're now a charity, and so it might surprise you, but we have 60 employees across the world. We have a global division, and then we have a division for four different territories, one for the UK, one for EMEA, Europe, Middle East and Africa, one for Asia Pacific, and one for Americas. So each of those four companies, they're not companies, but if you can just take them as companies, they have to run a proper operation. But those operational principles are set out by our trustees, our board, our global company. And becoming a charity really meant we needed to professionalize. So we hired people whose job it was to look at the whole area of, for instance, diversion and equity, inclusion, safeguarding, all these things. And so we, over the last 5 years, have built a very strong position where we have policies on all of these things. They defined at a global level, and then where necessary, we make customizations at the territory level. The downside of that is that where we are a mature territory, like the United Kingdom, it's very easy to have a fully fledged policy that meets with your needs. But when we're a immature organization, say for instance in Malaysia, it's very difficult to transpose those same high policies right across the way. So I try to think that we need to adapt in every single region depending on our maturity, and we need to address the local conditions in a way that means we can allow everybody to participate in a way that makes it possible.
Thank you. Next question.
Well, I did my first park run a month ago, and I was so impressed. So thank you so much what you started. Two quick questions. The first one is, how did you settle on the name Park Run? And secondly, you mentioned about the writing the software. Is it still the same software that you wrote, or has it been totally redone from the base?
Thank you. So for the first 3 or 4 years, we were called a time trial. The first one was called Bushy Park Time Trial. And the word time trial came from an event that I did in South Africa in my 20s. My local running club, on a Saturday morning, had a little 5K run around a lake, and they called it a time trial. And there were other clubs in South Africa that did a similar thing. And every single Saturday in the local national newspaper, they would have the results of all the time trials. Now, these were athletes. My time at that 5K time trial was 16:05, my fastest time, which blows my mind. But that's the kind of person I was, and I wasn't first. Those are the people I was competing with. And I remember thinking, what a great thing that once a week I can go and look in the newspaper before the internet, and I could see all these people across the whole of South Africa who were doing the same sort of thing that I was doing. Clearly, that's not what I created at Park in the United Kingdom. But it was based on that same principle. What I wanted was to get people to do a 5K and then to record those results and make it public for everybody. The internet pretty much started around the same time. 2004, Facebook was started, Amazon was started the same year. So those were my sort of models in terms of where this was going. Parkrun came about because I'd entered a relationship with Nike. Nike, as you all know, is a great marketing machine. And at that time, we had the concept of the 100 club only, just the 100 club. And when I was meeting with them, they said to me, Paul, we need to have more clubs. We need a 50 club, we need a 25 club, etc. And in that discussion, they also said to me, and you're going to have to forgive my language here because this is verbatim what they said to me. They said, this UKTT, UK time trial, it's a bit And I remembered a conversation I'd had with a friend of mine 2 years earlier when I was walking from Bushy Park back to the Pheasantry. And he's a good friend. He's someone that helped me with the IT. And we were walking across the park, and he always is 100 miles ahead of me. He's thinking, he's saying what, and it takes me 10 minutes to catch up, basically, so fast. And he said to me, Paul, this UKTT is a bit It doesn't represent what you're doing here. And I said to him, don't break something that's working. But in that moment when I was with Nike, and he also said to me, you should call it Park Run. And so I forgot about it for 2 years. But in that moment when I was with Nike, they said, it's not great. What should we call it? I said, let's call it Park Run. And we immediately settled on that. And that was Park Run. Now, when it comes to technology, yes, I wrote the initial systems. I built the database. My background is IT, but it's mainframe IT, banks, insurance companies, and so on. So not internet, not small-scale stuff. So I knew the principles of IT, and I was able to design the database, and I was able to build, in the first 10 years, the system ran on the software that I wrote. But we have subsequently rewritten the software that you see in the park on Saturday. That has been rewritten because it's much more efficient than what I wrote, and it's much better. But the database is exactly the database that I created, so nothing's changed there.
Excellent. Man of many talents. Next question.
Hi, Paul. I'm really excited that my dad has recently set up a brand new park run in Norfolk, and it's park run number 5 tomorrow. Do you have any advice for him and his team kind of establishing themselves in the local community and inspiring local people to get involved?
Great question, and it's one I get asked quite often, and it's sometimes a contentious point. And maybe this is the thing that churches can learn. I don't know. Parkrun works best when nobody owns it. Parkrun works best when everybody owns it. And as a new event director, the natural thing to do is to want to make it the best you can possibly make it. And so you start to think about, oh, I can improve this, or I can improve that, and so on. In fact, it works very, very well. We've proven that it works very well. Keep it simple. What they need to do is invite people in, make the group bigger, make that inner circle as big as you possibly can, and share everything. So the fact that you're the event director and you're the big cheese, it's not really that important. Get two or three people to be the big cheese, because then it really, really works.
Brilliant, thank you.
Hi, so you talked about the Parkrun organisation having 60 employees now. I was wondering if you could say a bit more about how Parkrun is funded and also how you stop those funders from having too much influence over the organisation.
Another great question. So in the early days, when I worked in IT, I was also part of a marketing team at some point, and I knew what it was to sell. I was engaged with people who were selling software, and so I understood the principles of selling and I understood the principles of marketing. And the one thing that I was very, very sure I didn't want at Parkrun was any kind of selling. And if you'll go back in the record books, you'll find that we didn't do anything that involved selling or promoting an item at a Parkrun. So where we, for instance, were partners with Adidas or Nike, they clearly wanted you to buy their shoes. But I would always say to them, that's not something that you can say. I restricted how they could talk. So they couldn't say, this is the greatest pair of shoes, you should buy it. Now, obviously, we've moved on. We struggled for funding for the first 10 or 15 years. We broke even pretty much for the first 10 or 15 years. And then we started to understand what the true value of Parkrun was. And for the last 7 or 8 years, we've been able to generate a fairly significant income. Part of that comes from sponsorship. And again, we still have to coach our sponsors into what language they can and can't use. And it gets more and more difficult the bigger we become and the bigger our sponsors are and the more money they invest. Part of our income is government. When we set up a new event in the United Kingdom, local council pays towards the startup. That's a fairly significant amount of income. And then we've also had income from people like Sport England, which is a quasi-government organization, who give us a fairly significant amount of money. Now, all of that has been hard-earned. When I was still the CEO of Parkrun and responsible for the funding and everything else, I worked for 5 years with Sport England and never got a penny from them. So it was really, really hard to get to the point where we got the funding. And now that we have the funding, we have all sorts of obligations around health and well-being that we have to abide by. So it's really important. I have been asking the company to be as reliable on their own income as much as possible for the last 10 years. And it's a really important thing that I want to get to the point where we are completely self-sustained. That's probably never going to happen. But what I have noticed is the money that we can generate for ourselves through, for instance, the T-shirt that I'm wearing has grown. So it's now a third of our income, which is pretty significant. Remember, there are 10 million people signed up to Parkrun across these 24 countries. If everybody bought a T-shirt, we wouldn't have a problem with money at all. You know, it would really, really change. Or if you all just gave me £1 for every event that you'd done, I would be very wealthy. So no, I mean, it's a really important question, and it's a big question, because if we are going to take this organization and export the product across the world to the places that need it most, we are going to have to invest. And I think we'll only be able to do that as we can afford to do it. And that's a really important part about making sure that we are always a stable organization with reserves and we can afford what we're doing.
Thank you. I think we've probably got time for two more questions. So.
Yeah. Could I just ask Paul, would churches be possibly better places if we encouraged people to wear a T-shirt saying how many times they've been to church?
I I like that idea. Milestone t-shirts for church going.
I mean, it's a great question, and I think you should ask your audience. I mean, put your hand up if you would wear a t-shirt that said how many times you've been to church. It's just two or three. I don't know. Why are we afraid of identifying with our church? We should be really proud of that relationship. And I know my children are church going, and they are very, very proud of their church. So I see no reason why you wouldn't want to advertise that.
Brilliant. Thank you. And I think a final question.
I think I first heard of parkrun in about 2009 when my friend said to me, I've heard of this thing called parkrun, and I'm going to set it up in Crossflats Park in South Leeds. And I don't know how early on the journey it was. So I imagine fairly early, and it's clearly grown incredibly. I wonder what you think it is that's enabled it to replicate and scale in the way it is. I'm sure partly it's a lot of hard work and there's money and all sorts, but it strikes me there's probably other ideas here amongst us today. You know, and some great ideas fail and some great ideas scale and replicate. Is there any kind of magic in the DNA of parkrun that meant that it has scaled and replicated? Is there anything we can learn from that?
I think scaling and replicating is definitely a process thing. You have to have the right mindset and you have to have the right people in order to do that. But when you talk about DNA, I think there is something special there. There is a little bit of magic that is very difficult to box, very difficult to describe. But it definitely exists at parkrun. If you've never been to a parkrun, you're going to find it difficult to understand this. But if you do go to a parkrun, regardless of your participation, whether it's as a spectator, a volunteer, a jogger, a walker, a runner, what you'll observe is that it is inherently good. There is nothing bad about it. And I remember in the first 10 years having loads and loads of arguments and fights with people who wanted me to stop doing what I was doing, who put obstacles in my way, who wanted to stop the growth because it didn't suit them. And the thing that came back to me all the time was that I could find no bad in parkrun. I only understood it to be a thing that was good. And as a result, I refused to accept those challenges. And I just decided I would fight every single challenge that came my way. And I think there are similarities between that DNA and the DNA that you have in your churches. So scaling is just a process thing. You need money, you need power, you need people, and you need the will to do that.
Thank you. Paul, I want to say a massive thank you for finally responding and saying yes to coming to Greenbelt. It's been really good to hear from you today. But also I want to say, I'm getting emotional now, thank you for persisting with parkrun. I think, you know, I can speak for all of us that do it. So it does give us so much. And I'm really grateful that, you know, you started it. You've seen it through. You've given it away in lots of senses to all of us. And thank you so much for giving us parkrun.
I'm always very grateful to hear that parkrun is a good thing and that it's done your life good. But we shouldn't forget that it's changed my life too. And, you know, I am the founder of parkrun. I'll always be the founder of parkrun. And no matter what happens, it's in my DNA and I will do everything I can to protect it and to keep it there for you. So I think that's my promise to you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Greenbelt, one more time for Jenny and Paul.
Thanks so much for listening to this recorded talk. Explore our full Greenbelt Festival Talks archive with almost 20 years of recorded talks and podcasts for free at greenbelt.org.uk/talks. talks.